Did you know that collagen makes up 30% of the protein in your body? It's the substance that gives structure, support, and strength to your skin, muscles, bones, and connective tissues. Collagen is what keeps our skin firm and youthful, preventing it from sagging. It also supplies amino acids that are crucial for building healthy hair and protecting hair follicles. The collagen supplement that I use and recommend to my patients is Revive by Bright Core Nutrition. Revive combines five types of collagen with hyaluronic acid and biotin to heal and nourish your skin, hair, and nails. Studies show that collagen also helps relieve joint inflammation and pain. If you're looking to heal your body from the inside out and reverse some effects of aging, Revive could be your answer. For more information and to order, visit mybrightcore.com/Hoffman. That's mybrightcore.com/Hoffman or call 888-592-9909. That's 888-592-9909. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, buy two bottles of Revive and get one free, plus a collagen sheet mask as a free gift. That's mybrightcore.com/Hoffman for Revive Multi-Collagen Protein. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. I don't know about you, but this is perhaps my favorite hour of the week during which we get to answer questions. By we, I mean yours truly and Layla Mutin, who's our resident nutritionist. We work together on a daily basis here in Manhattan seeing patients, but also we mutually do this Q&A podcast, Q&A with Layla once a week. How are you doing, Leyland?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman, how are you? And ditto. It's
indeed.
Fun.
Yes, yep. Mutual Admiration Society. And so questions come to questions@drhoffman.net.
Yes.
And we're going to get to questions in just a moment. But here's an interesting story. I don't know if you've heard about this story. A food company executive was arrested on a pair of charges after reportedly biting a man's nose in a parking garage in Fayetteville, Arkansas, Saturday night. Doug Ramsey, 53, of Fayetteville, he has an appetite for human flesh, apparently. He was arrested on September 17 on charges of terroristic threatening and third-degree battery. The incident happened at a parking garage near Razorback Stadium following Arkansas's victory over Missouri State. So this is a football game, so emotions run high. What's interesting about this individual is that he is COO for Beyond Meat.
Oh!
Which is kind of ironic, given that he seems to have a taste for human flesh.
He had such a rabid craving from not having meat all this.
However, he may be going through withdrawal because he is a former executive with Tyson Foods.
Chicken.
And he also was named president of Global McDonald's Business in 2019. So this is maybe what happens when you go too abruptly on a vegan diet.
Yes. You go from all that animal meat, all that meat to...
So I thought that was rather ironic.
Oh, my goodness.
In other news... Chinese researchers are at it again. They have developed something very interesting. It's a face mask that can detect viral exposure from a 10-minute conversation with an infected person.
Wow.
So scientists have created a face mask that can detect common respiratory viruses, including influenza and the coronavirus, in the air in droplets or aerosols. This highly sensitive mask can alert the wearers via their mobile devices within 10 minutes if targeted pathogens are present in the surrounding air.
Oh, my.
So another good reason just to wear face masks all the time. Not only
all the time
can they protect you, but they will also alert you. If you ever have a conversation with somebody who's a little too close, and then you see a little spittle flying out of your mouth, that is kind of unpleasant.
Yeah.
And you might just want to know whether they're transmitting dangerous respiratory viruses to you. But if you're wearing this face mask, you can be protected,
And B, you can be alerted via your phone. You will receive an alert that the person you're having a conversation with is Typhoid Mary. Pretty cool. Pretty cool. It's not yet available as an app in the Apple App Store.
Oh, my.
But coming to a store near you, it says, our mask would work really well in spaces with poor ventilation, such as elevators or enclosed rooms. According to Dr. Yin Fang. It's Chinese research just published. The next thing the team hopes to do is to shorten the detection time, which can give you an immediate alert, so that whenever you're talking to somebody who is infectious, it will let you know. I mean, I could see a market for this.
Totally.
People already are very germophobic.
Yes, there's still a lot of people wearing masks, even though it's
notwithstanding the statement by our president that the pandemic is over. And he was walking around without a mask.
Yes.
When a couple of weeks ago, he would get off, you know, the helicopter Marine One or whatever it is.
Yes, yes.
Without wearing a mask on the White House lawn. So I'm getting confused.
I think he was confused too.
Okay. Suffice it to say, there's some cognitive dissonance going on.
Absolutely.
About wearing. But anyway, I mean, this could be a boon to people who are very concerned about exposure. You know, so.
All right.
You know, Just saying.
That would be very strange if a person wearing a mask was a germaphobe, then meets their friend and asks their friend, would you put this mask on to make sure that I wouldn't be your friend anymore, honestly, if that was requested.
No, because what you do is you can let the rest of the world be maskless.
Yeah.
You wear the mask and you check your phone all the time or your phone sends you an alert. Danger, danger.
You know? So then you run? Then you don't meet your friend anymore.
You start taking Paxlovid.
Oh, immediately. And that can also be on your phone that you can go show your pharmacist, here's my script.
I'd been exposed.
Paxlovid.
Red alert, I'd been exposed.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So whatever. I this is changing our consciousness about risk, I think, in a major way.
Yeah.
And I think it's skewing people to being highly risk averse.
Yeah.
So, you know, remember the good old days, even the pre-AIDS days, you know, the worst thing you could get was gonorrhea, you know, which was curable with a shot of penicillin in the butt. Mm-hmm. And then there came a disease which was sexually transmitted, which could kill you, which was AIDS. And then there came, you know, succeeding pandemics and then COVID. And I think people have reason now to sequester in a, you know, in their electronic environment and do everything online.
Right. Not that it helped, because we kept getting variants and waves and didn't help.
Yeah. I'm noticing that some of our patients, some of the most careful patients that we've had, and they've been really very COVID.
COVID aware.
Aware. Mm. And wearing, you know, precautionary gear and for example, my hairdresser managed to get she has a lot of contact with people. She managed to get through 2 years of COVID without getting COVID.
Wow.
And she also, you know, she and I follow instructions. When you go to get a haircut, she has you wear a mask. Sure. She doesn't want to be exposed to COVID. She doesn't want customers exposed. Fine, you know, and go with the flow.
Yeah.
I'm not, there was a, I actually witnessed, it was a fight that happened in the salon.
Oh my goodness.
Where a guy got on his high horse and why are you wearing masks? And it's like a big fight. They finally had to say, look, you know, we can't work with you. You know, you'll have to find another hairdresser because this is the rules. So anyway, so she calls me up last week. You know, the haircut that we have tomorrow, I can't do it because I got COVID. So even
these
people using precautions, masks and whatever.
Yeah.
It happens.
It does. We got to live with it.
A high percentage of people have been exposed and have had it. And part of, I think, with Biden's attitude about, you know, the pandemic is over, he finally had COVID.
Yeah.
And it wasn't such a big whoop.
No.
Even for a guy who's older and maybe not in the best shape. You know, I always kind of worried. I thought, if he gets COVID, it's going to be challenging. He got COVID. And
but the weaker and weaker, yet more virulent strains, it's like
more transmissible.
More virulence
is the strength of
sorry.
You got the term. It's virulence and transmissibility.
It's less virulent. and more transmissible.
Exactly. Yeah, there's almost a trade-off, because the virus only has so much genetic material. It can't be good at all things. It only has so much coding available to it, and all the coding is now going into extreme transmissibility versus virulence. Also, from a evolutionary standpoint, viruses that kill their carriers, their hosts,
they don't live.
End of the line for the virus. You actually want your host to be able to be gregarious, maybe unaware that they have the virus, and transmitting it, asymptomatically.
Right.
That would be best case scenario for the evolution of a virus. And hence we have attenuated strains. Some people are predicting the worst, that there's going to be a surge, that the virus will regain virulence. Mm-hmm. But they don't know. They're simply, I think, being alarmists. And I think they're being COVIDians. They're sort of hanging.
They're COVIDians. I like that term.
Or
because I definitely see COVIDians still in New York.
Another term is Corona Bros.
Corona Bros.
So, but look, we can't laugh at this because there's some uncertainty.
Yeah.
And we don't know, but I'd like to make an optimistic assumption. I'm by nature a bit of an optimist, a cautious optimist. And I'd like to make a cautiously optimistic projection about what will happen this spring and winter. So, hopefully we're on the right track. Knock wood. Let's get to questions. Questions@vermhoffman.net. And we apologize, if this is triggering material for you.
But we deal with this stuff. The stuff we deal with all the time. Yeah. We've got an email from Barbara, who's sending us Cornell research on cholesterol. Mm-hmm. A study identifies gut bacteria that regulate cholesterol. Mm-hmm. And this is actually coming out of, I had the name of the, anyway.
Forget about it.
I had the name of, okay. So this is a study that's the first of its kind to identify species of gut bacteria that convert cholesterol from animal foods to a molecule called cholesterol sulfate.
Right.
And what they found is that Bacteroides does that. So although cholesterol sulfate is readily produced in human tissues, this study is the first to show that the gut microbiome
can transform it.
Yes, can produce cholesterol sulfate. So, and how they were going about how this discovery happened, it was enabled by a new method in Johnson's lab. It's called the BOS technology, which they were able to trace which microbes are acting on that cholesterol.
This actually follows. This is not the
for Nature Microbiology.
Okay, which is
Nature Microbiology,
a very high-end medical journal,
and from Cornell University.
Now, this is the first time that this has been suggested. In fact, there's research dating years back that suggests even that lactobacilli, which is a different type of probiotic, can help to reduce cholesterol. And the idea is that some probiotics sort of act like Pac-Men.
Yeah.
In the GI tract, they kind of eat up and convert cholesterol. There was even a startup company that had developed a cholesterol-lowering probiotic, and I don't know what became of it because I was very excited about it, and then I haven't heard much about it. I think they began getting marketing approval in certain other countries, perhaps in Europe and in, Asia, maybe Korea or Taiwan, and I don't know that it's gotten traction here in the U.S. I see articles dating back into the early 2000s about cholesterol-lowering effects of probiotics.
Yeah.
And certainly prebiotics.
Yes. So according to the researchers, they say, quote, when we think about cholesterol metabolism and cardiovascular health, there may be ways to use the microbiome to modulate cholesterol levels or other relevant lipids. That's why they're so exciting.
To make this is like kind of a disease claim, and I think it depends on how they want to go with this research. They could go and they could market it as an over-the-counter thing without an FDA medical approval, which is going to take a lot of money and a lot of time and a lot of research to get to this level where they say, hey, this is approved by the FDA, but if they can sell it as a supplement where they could say it improves your some weasel words like it improves microbiome health or something like that with potential benefits for the heart. They have to like use kind of very circumstantial language to allude to the potential benefits. But for them to say, this is a probiotic that lowers your cholesterol, and, you know, it could go toe-to-toe with statin drugs, you know.
Right.
Then they would have to go through a drug route.
Yeah.
It's an expensive route. So I don't know where they're going to go with this. You know, they're usually researchers at places like Cornell. They want patents. They want to sell it to a drug company who can do the research and development and marketing and know the ropes to get FDA approval.
Yeah.
Where then they can get the bucks.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
But it's hard to patent a living thing. A living thing. You know,
sure.
It's, yeah.
Yeah. Barbara, thank you for this. Thank you for bringing this to our attention. Okay.
Good point at which to pause, because you want to allow one of our sponsors this opportunity to share an important message with you. So listen up.
You've heard me talk for years about the breakthrough health benefits of CBD. Now, our friends at CV Sciences have developed an innovative suite of non-CBD products that mimic CBD's healthful effects. CV Sciences' new Plus Health CBD-free line of gummies and capsules. The Plus Health Clarity gummies are packed with DMAE, lion's mane, and rhodiola designed to boost your cognitive performance, enhance memory, and provide natural energy. You need a little peace and calm? Plus Health's Peace Gummies, soothing blend of L-theanine, lemon balm, and St. John's wort supports serenity and relaxation without the drowsiness. And if you're on a journey towards optimal health, the Reshape capsules are packed with powerful ingredients like berberine and OEA to support metabolic health and help maintain healthy blood sugar levels. For more information and to order, head over to pluscbdoil.com/Hoffman. Use coupon code Hoffman30. For 30% off. That's pluscbdoil.com/Hoffman for the new Plus Health non-CBD collection.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting our sponsors. They are what make Intelligent Medicine a continuing free resource to you. And now back to our questions.
This comes from a doctor. Dysfunctional medicine.
Nice to hear from doctors.
Yeah, a Dr. Santi. Dysfunctional medicine offer an appreciable help, any appreciable help, for patients with eosinophilic esophagitis.
Eosinophilic. Yeah.
Esophagitis, thank you.
First of all, what is eosinophilic esophagitis?
Allergy.
Esophagitis, yeah, because eosinophils are the type of white blood cells that are associated with allergies.
Mm-hmm.
In eosinophilic esophagitis, there's a great deal of inflammation, pain, difficulty swallowing in the esophagus, the food tube, but it is not due to mere acidity. It's due to proliferation of eosinophils.
Right.
And so the clue is that maybe allergy is the root of that. Now, there are medicines to suppress the eosinophils. And
would it be antihistamines?
Well, antihistamines, but even going beyond that, there's actually some even monoclonal antibodies that they're now using to suppress eosinophils. So really powerful things. But I have found, before the advent of these medications, because some of these medications are new, not the antihistamines, but the more targeted, really strong.
The monoclonal antibodies.
Yeah, the MABs.
The MABs.
There was the dietary approach. So what I would do with eosinophilic esophagitis patients, and they're few and far between, it's not that common. Most of the patients with esophageal problems and GERD, it's, you know, not eosinophilic esophagitis.
Yeah.
You have to do a biopsy to prove that.
Yeah.
It is to be on what's called an oligoantigenic diet. So what would you take them off of? What are the major food culprits for that, would you say?
Well, we look at, first we want to test them, no?
Well, you could, but it may not show up.
It may not show up.
On allergy tests.
So
because
the usual suspects, it could be any of the top 8 food allergens, including wheat, milk, eggs, shellfish.
Perhaps nuts.
Fish, nuts.
Yeah.
Peanuts, soy. Those are the top 8.
Yeah.
And then possibly other suspects. I guess we would have to investigate.
Maybe yeast. Things that can, yeast containing things for fermenting foods.
Right. And maybe, could that be caused by having taken rounds and rounds of antibiotics for other reasons, like sinus infections or other things that
it could make it worse.
Can cause, yeah.
It could make it worse.
Yeah.
It could make it, I mean, certainly, but we and don't also, know the cause of eosinophilic esophagitis. It's just kind of an immune system out of control.
Yeah.
Kind of
want to modulate.
But kind of a Chernobyl of your immune system.
Yeah. Wow. And there's always a target organ.
Right. So there it's the esophagus.
Esophagus.
Yeah. And we have a couple of patients. So one of them has moved to Chicago that I know of, a member from 2 years back. And he did pretty well on this oligoantigenic diet without, you know, some of these powerful medications.
Wow.
But, you know, during the break between part one and part two, I may look up some of the newer medications for this, but he's looking for holistic.
Yeah.
Would we use things like DGL? It wouldn't hurt.
Sure.
You know, it is anti-inflammatory.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would imagine taking additional vitamin C for antihistamine effect, loads of quercetin.
Mm-hmm.
We take 6 quercetin.
Like a blocker kind of thing.
Right.
Like a histamine blocker. But
right. Or something like a dehist, which has the quercetin as well as bromelain, which may also be helpful. But also a good study of what that person is eating. If there are certain same foods that are being eaten most frequently, those may be suspect of causing the immune system to overreact like that. It's nature's argument for variety in the diet, which is very interesting. You don't want the same exposure to the same food or the same toxicant each time. And that's really nature's argument for variety in the diet. Imagine if you ate a tuna fish sandwich every day, at some point you will be full of mercury,
mm-hmm.
whether you have, even if you have no silver amalgams in your teeth, you will become.
I stand corrected. So standard treatments have been steroids and or PPIs, proton pump inhibitors, which is kind of the way they treat regular GERD.
Yeah.
There's a new indication for a drug called Dupixent.
I
am correct in saying I was right that it is a monoclonal antibody. It's dupilumab, and anything with an AB on the end is a monoclonal antibody. It's a biologic, and it is a strong anti-allergy kind of thing. It's sometimes used in severe asthma. So they actually say that it's a breakthrough treatment for eosinophilic esophagitis. And according to the latest research, it works, and it helps to reduce difficulty swallowing, which is a symptom. It reduces the inflammation, and it's an injectable.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I see almost exclusively ads for biologics on television anymore.
Do you know why?
Everything's a mab.
Why? What do you think?
Because that's the most profit-making.
Bingo.
Right.
Bingo. Because those drugs are costing tens of thousands of dollars a year.
Which is being covered by insurance.
Which is being covered by
insurance.
Which we're
all paying for. So right. We're all paying for all these. Yeah.
Right. So, and, you know, you watch this and say, who the heck has these, like, weird conditions that they're talking about? Because that's a common condition sometimes. If only 3 people go to their doctor and ask for this, and the doctor says, oh, yeah, sure, maybe. Yeah, let's go for that. That pays for the whole commercial.
Oh, yeah.
And more.
It really does, right?
And especially given that these drugs are chronically administered, because it's not like, you know, it's not like taking a dose of antibiotics.
It's not a cure.
It's a chronic, you know,
it's
kind of administration.
Chronic, keep you coming back.
Yeah.
That's a better business model.
Yeah.
Keep you coming back. That's what I used to say when I did my clinical rotation of my dietetic internship at Jacoby Medical Center, when I was horrified to find out, well, where's the cafeteria? Oh, this is a cafeteria? It was a McDonald's.
Well,
it was a McDonald's.
Well,
I said, oh, they want return customers here
in this
hospital.
What's actually happening there with those is that, it's a fix. It's like for a hospital to run their own nutritious cafeteria.
True.
It's a big undertaking. It's a food service. So yeah. McDonald's is like a turnkey operation.
Yeah.
Just give them the space, they'll set it up, boom, boom, boom. And it's almost like they'll pay pouring rights to have that there, because it kind of gives like an aura of respectability to McDonald's, and B, it's it's a source of tremendous revenue to the hospital.
True.
To the hospital.
I'll tell you, while I was an undergrad, my field experience was at Cabrini Hospital, if you remember Cabrini Hospital.
I do.
On the lower...
Shut it down.
Yeah, they shut it down, but they had an amazing food service set up.
Well, that's probably
food,
why I
and
went,
the quality of
that's
food.
Why I went belly up.
Probably, because they even got thank you cards from the patients that were posted all over the bulletin board in the food service office. And I remember marveling at this, and I ate the food. It was delicious, of course, but then they were gone.
You know where the food, I don't know what it's like now. It probably is as good or even better. He is at Memorial Sloan Kettering Hospital. I did a rotation during medical school in the 1980s at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Hospital here in New York. And the food there was terrific. And I think it's not so much for the sake of the patients, it's for the sake of the staff. I think they had like a lot of upscale, intelligent staff people there, and they just didn't want to feed them garbage. And they wanted like kind of an additional benefit of working there is that you could really get a really beautiful salad. They had a salad bar.
Yes.
And they had
very nice,
healthy, nutritious food there. So, I mean, at least that was a plus. But other hospitals I've seen, unfortunately, have, they've gone for the quick buck, basically.
Too bad.
It's an economic incentive.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Santi, thank you for that very thoughtful question. Let's see here. We've got from Louise. Hi, Dr. Hoppen and Layla. I saw an ad for magnesium in spray form. I investigated a little, and it was magnesium chloride. It said it could be used for leg cramps to spray directly on the area. Wouldn't it be better to take a magnesium supplement regularly, like magnesium glycinate or citrate? Your thoughts on this, please. Yeah. The magnesium spray.
Sprayed on magnesium. I'm not sure that it's absorbed that well.
I'll tell you what. My husband tried it because I got him the spray on magnesium because I was giving him oral magnesium. It didn't seem to be doing...
What was he trying to spray?
Cramps.
We had cramps.
Calf cramps in the middle of the night.
Right.
So we tried the magnesium spray. All he complained about was that it stung his skin.
Okay.
So, and then after a time, he did Epsom salt baths for
right,
a while.
Which is spot disease.
Consuming. Even though you could give yourself a foot bath with the Epsom salts, up to your calves.
Yeah.
Maybe that could help, but.
There's been some products that are topical magnesium, and I've been skeptical about them.
Yeah.
I don't know if there are any really studies that show that it increases systemic levels of magnesium. Magnesium is a small molecule, magnesium chloride, so theoretically, he should be able to penetrate the skin.
But some people have such a hard time, even with oral supplementation, getting their magnesium levels up. Some people even require, remember back
IV
in the
magnesium.
Day, like a Myers cocktail or something like that.
Well, we had the dilemma with a patient today.
Yeah.
She has a lot of cramps and spasms.
Yes.
She even, speaking of the esophagus, she has esophageal spasm.
Mm-hmm.
And you would think that giving her more magnesium would help. The problem is that she has... IBS-D. She has the
diarrhea
predominant
IBS.
Kind of IBS. So I want her to take magnesium for the spasms.
But not to cause diarrhea.
Yeah.
It's got to be a Goldilocks dose.
Yes, yeah.
Right.
So here are the mildest form. Her IBS is much better with what we're doing.
Yes.
And I said, now it's time to start very gradually, taking one magnesium glycinate per day.
Mm.
I think you'll tolerate it. At least give you maybe a little protection against spasms and cramps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But there's a French researcher, and I think his name is Dr. Durlach, and he wrote a treatise on magnesium many years ago, I think in the 1980s.
Mm-hmm.
And the term he uses in French, he's French, is spasmophilie. Spasmophilie. You said it very well.
Yes.
Good accent.
I took French.
Oh, good. Yes. Spasmophilie, which means spasmophilia. Which means a proclivity to spasms. And he was a big magnesium researcher. And his belief is that many disorders in the body are related to spasms, like not just calf cramps, but smooth muscle spasms.
Yes.
And, you could even think of...
Like in the GI tract or in the coronary arteries and...
Yeah, arterial spasm.
Sure.
And even cardiac arrhythmias.
Yeah.
And so magnesium has the ability to stabilize the nerve conduction, the membranes that surround the neurons, and prevent them from triggering and firing precipitously. And so That's why he's a big fan of magnesium for these conditions. And even migraine too.
Migraine.
Yeah, it's a big, which is a form of arterial, actually dysregulation. It's not so much spasm, it's dilation.
I can't think of a migraine patient we've had, Dr. Hoffman, over the years that didn't do better with magnesium.
Some magnesium, yeah.
Yeah.
And then even there's a subgroup of them who do well with intravenous magnesium.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, Louise, that magnesium in a spray may not be. Take the glycinate if it's muscle cramps, leg cramps, or even the citrate, but the citrate can take it further and cause diarrhea. So we want to be careful there.
Okay. We're ready to go to part two. We're going to pause in just a moment and then have you resume on part two.
Yeah.
Give us a preview what we're going to tackle there.
What is the lowdown on iodized salt? Do we really need it?
Okay. Interesting question. Questions come to questions@drhoffman.net. Another way to get questions to us during the weekend show. I was gratified that some people selecting that route this last weekend when I do my live show. 877-726-8255. During the show is especially welcome from noon to two on Saturdays. But anytime you like, you can call and there is a record option. And you'll be prompted to record your question at 877-726-8255, and we will air it during our weekly radio program. Mm.
Terrific. Okay.
All right. On to part two. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Layla Mutin. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla.